This podcast takes you into the rarely discussed realm of the personal decisions leaders have taken that have influenced their business decisions and developed them into the leaders they are today. The refreshingly honest experiences of those who have been very successful provide an insight into the challenges they faced, the successes they achieved, and the people who influenced them along their journey. Here's our host, Mark Silvera.
Welcome to Business Made Personal. This podcast is brought to you by the insurance industry's leading education and events provider, ANZIF, via their Careers in Insurance initiative. I'm Mark Silvera.
Hey, wherever you are and whatever you're doing, thank you so much for making us part of your day. I have with me today Jasmine Gabrielli. Now, Jasmine works at Honan Insurance Group as a key client manager. She has 9 years general broking experience and is passionate about simplifying the complex world of insurance for business owners. She has studied at ANZIF throughout her career, and Jasmine has obtained her Tier 1, as well as her Diploma of Insurance Broking and a Bachelor of Business in Insurance by ANZIF and Charles Sturt University. Outside of work, Jasmine is a keen chef and a dog mum to six-year-old beagle Hugo. Hey, welcome to the podcast, Jasmine.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Jasmine, I always start by asking people a little bit about their life before insurance or before work. What's your story?
Well, I was born in Mount Gambier, which is a small country town between Adelaide and Melbourne. Was there until I was 5. I'm one of 2 children, so me and my brother Josh, and my parents all moved up to Adelaide when I was 5, and I lived there until I think I was about 21, 22, and yeah, I guess a bit of a country girl, and, you know, now I've moved to the big city of Melbourne. So my parents were, you know, worked in the transport industry, tyres, and dad was a diesel mechanic. So growing up, I was, you know, always hanging around the workshop and saw him work really long hours. And, you know, mum did a lot of the stuff with us because she just did the books for dad. So, yeah, I guess always worked in small business as a kid, and, yeah, had a great upbringing. We had all sorts of fun activities. Mum and dad didn't let us go without anything. We, you know, had water skiing and boats and motorbikes on the weekends, like dirt bikes. And yeah, I have to look back at my childhood and thought it was awesome growing up.
Your dad was obviously in a retail business, which is generally speaking long hours. Did you feel that you needed to spend more time with him? Because often that's the biggest issue with people in retail, right? The hours are just not family friendly.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, sort of. We'd work 18 hours a day. So, yeah, we never saw dad until I was probably like 11 or 12. We only saw dad on Sundays, but he would work, yeah, 6 days a week. And, you know, he was always on call outs to fix a truck, or whether it was tyres or mechanical sort of stuff that he was doing. So, yeah, I mean, later down the track, I think I was about 13 and my parents had a car accident actually. And it sort of made them stop and go, well, family's really important. So they took us out of school and we spent 3 months in Italy when I was 13, which was really awesome. So that was sort of the time that my family really became like a family unit, because before that it was just sort of the day-to-day grind of dad goes to work, we go to school, we'd see him on Sunday. And then, yeah, after about, yeah, probably 12 or 13, then we actually got to know dad as a person, not just, oh, the guy that you see every now and again and pays the bills.
Yeah, it's a common complaint with anyone in things like hospitality or retail, right? So that sort of 3 month period, is that where you got your love for traveling?
Definitely. Like, I've been overseas one other time when I was, I think, 6 or 7. We went to New Zealand. But aside from that, we didn't do an awful lot of travel aside from to go back to Mount Gambier on school holidays and see family, because most of my family is still down there. So, yeah, I think having 3 months over there at such a young age really exposed me to there being a bigger world out there. And then the minute that I could, I went overseas every year pretty much after that. As soon as I had my own money and, you know, started working and save up and go overseas. And, yeah, I think that really opens up your eyes.
You know, as a young person, you grew up in Mount Gambier, then you moved to Adelaide, which you might have thought was the big smoke in those days. Why did you guys move to Adelaide? Was it your parents' work? Was it work-related?
Yeah, dad's job. So he was, yeah, in tyres, and then he got a job subcontracting as a diesel mechanic to another company up in Adelaide. And he was there for 2 weeks doing all this work and just rang mum and said, I'm staying here. You guys better come and join me. So move up here. So Mum had to pack up the house and we all moved to Adelaide.
You know, you would have been quite young in those days. How did that impact you? Was that a difficult thing to do?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we spent a lot of time going back in school holidays with the family. So I'd see my grandparents and everything back like home in Mount Gambier. But I guess we just had us four, you know, like Dad, who we didn't see that often, and Mum looked after us, you know, day to day. She did everything for us. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess it was probably isolating, but I didn't really notice because I guess I just started going to school. I would have been primary school and, yeah, we did all sorts of sports. So whatever we wanted to do, I did dancing and taekwondo and then we ended up doing water sports and Mum just ran us around and did everything. So we were very busy. So I don't think I really noticed.
So then you decide that you're going to pack your bongos and you're going to move to Melbourne. Did you do that on your own?
No. Followed a boy, but it was once I was in insurance and it was a really easy move actually because I'd started off at Guardian Insurance Group in Adelaide. I was there for nearly 2 years and that was going really, really well. And then I was like, oh, I want to move to Melbourne. So, yeah, just quite easily found a job in Melbourne. I mean, it's a lot bigger market over here and I had a lot of opportunities. So I interviewed with a few different companies and I had a couple of options. And I sort of went, that one sounds good. So I moved over. And I've been here for 5 years, no more, I think 7 years now. I've been here 7 years and I love it. I don't see myself moving home. But, yeah, when I moved originally, I was a little bit scared. Like, I was like, it was like the big, big smoke.
And it's challenging too because, you know, all your family, well, I mean, you had some family in Adelaide, but most of your family still in Mount Gambier. Did you have anyone here?
No one, nothing, except for the boyfriend and his sort of network, but I had to start again, really. Like I had to make all of my own friends, which obviously insurance is a very social environment, so that works really well. I've made a lot of good friends through the industry over the last 7 years here in Melbourne. But, yeah, it was tough, I have to say, and especially during lockdown, as you know, like being over here and not having a family network was really, really tough.
What sort of things did you do to sort of overcome those challenges?
I probably threw myself into work, to be honest. I, you know, just wanted to do really, really well in my career and maybe whilst on the weekends I didn't have huge social network. Yeah, I think I probably was really focused on my career.
Thinking about that sort of time, was there someone that was a major influence in your life that you not necessarily emulated but you were impressed by them and you wanted to sort of replicate the sorts of stuff? Did you have someone like that in your life?
Yeah, I think, well, there's a lot of really strong female leaders in our industry and probably throwing back to when I was at Guardian, obviously I had Evan Jackson there who got me, you know, into the industry and into insurance. But I worked very closely with Heather Blanco, who now is the CEO at Surewise. And I think you look at female leaders like that and where I was a very junior person and then you come to Melbourne and you go, you look up to people that have done really well in their careers and you go, I want to be like that, you know. Whether it's Heather or whether it's any of the senior leaders I've worked with, it's Patrick and Co. here at Honan. We've got a lot of senior female leaders and even at all of our insurers. You know, you meet people and you go, they're really impressive and I want to be like that. And, you know, you can't ever carbon copy someone's career, but you can look at them and go, I aspire to be like that person.
And just talking about the whole strong female leader piece, how has it been difficult being a female in this industry for you? Has there been challenges that you either didn't expect or things thrown in your way that you thought was not quite right?
There has been occasions throughout my career that, you know, you go, that would never have happened to a male, you know, and whether it's, you know, sort of a bit of sexual innuendo or whatever it is, but I actually can't say that being a female has held me back from any opportunity. Like I'm quite a confident person and I do feel like men, if they can do 70% of a job, actually I'll say that again, men, if they can do like 50% of a job, they'll put themselves up for it. But women will want to be able to do 90% of it before they will put themselves up for it. So I think as women, we need to be more confident and believe in ourselves a bit more and push ourselves a bit more like men do. I mean, that's probably where we will push forward further and I guess gain strides in our forever race to have equal pay and equal opportunity to men. But I think we're getting there.
Yeah, absolutely. And thinking about that aspect, so talking about, you know, you can do 50% of the job, not that you said that you did that, but Is there enough support when you get into a role in insurance? Is there enough support to actually help you with that 10%, that 20%, that 30%, do you think?
I think it depends on where you work and who your direct line manager is. So I think having the right people in management roles is really important. So throughout my 9 years, I've definitely had really supportive direct line managers and some that maybe it could have been better, you know, where you could have had someone that pushed you harder or gave you more support or gave you more guidance or said, or even gave more critical feedback. Sometimes I reflect on, you know, a mistake I've made or how I handled a situation. I go, oh, I could have done that so much better. And at the time, that might be a year down the track. And at the time, you're like, I wish my leader had have pulled me aside and gone, you know, this is how you could have done this better. And maybe some people don't want to offend you and you never know. Some people aren't forward enough to probably tell you, you know, this is, you did a good job, but here's how you could have done it better.
And, you know, you've gone from insurance broker, then you've come into Melbourne. How difficult has it been for you to work out what your career path is in the insurance industry?
Yeah, I guess I started off in claims and then went into assisting broking and then since then have just been account management essentially in that SME space. I think the world's your oyster when you're in insurance. Like if I wanted to, you know, cross the fence into underwriting, there's no major barriers to entry for me to do that. Like there's always an opportunity. There's always a company that will give you a go as long as you've got the transferable skills and, you know, the want to learn. But for me, I just really love broking. So I haven't ever gone, oh, yeah, I want to go and be a PI underwriter or I want to go and, you know, be a BDM or whatever. Like the thoughts crossed my mind, but I'm like, no, I just really love what I do. So I want to keep doing that.
And what is it about broking that you love?
I think the relationship with the client and helping them solve a problem, you know, being part of their team, like especially because I focus really on SME and mid-market accounts and not that big high-end corporate, you know, those smaller businesses, they don't have in-house legal. They don't have an in-house risk manager. So you are an extension of their team. They rely on you for advice and they come to you with a problem and often they'll share some of their trials and tribulations of business and, you know, their problems with staff and you just get to learn a bit about them and their struggles, but then you become, yeah, like really trusted advisor to them and you really build that relationship and it's quite, most of the time, quite a sticky relationship with that client.
You mentioned before you talked about mistakes and you wish someone had pulled you aside, et cetera, et cetera. We all make those things, right? But what I wanted to ask you was how is a mistake or an apparent mistake, how have you learned from it and what did that actually teach you?
One of my big ones would be emotional intelligence. Like I'm a very passionate person. I'm very, you know, emotional. Like, you know, I'm fiery Italian, half Australian. And I think because I care so much, sometimes I probably let my emotions be seen by others more than they should. So for me, I would see that as a steep learning curve and it's still ongoing. Like I still need to get better at my emotional intelligence. That's definitely something that's on my improvement list. But I think it's having leaders tell you and make you aware of something that you're doing, whether it's you know, how you handled a staff member or how you handled a situation, losing a client or whatever it is, and how you could handle it better and then how you learn from that moving forward. So I would say some good feedback I've received was, you know, Jasmine, small things make you sometimes escalate to an 8 out of 10. You need to just go, what's worth your energy? You know, your energy is so powerful. Is it worth you escalating to an 8 out of 10 over something that should be a 2 out of 10? And then you go, why am I wasting my energy on that? But you need a good leader and a good person that cares about you, a good mentor to go, this is what you're doing wrong, learn from it. And just changing your perspective on it.
Yeah. And I also think that some of that comes with just time.
Age, maturity.
Well, I didn't want to say age or maturity because some people like me might age and might be mature, but I still haven't worked it out, right?
Well, I'm glad. I've got some more time.
Talk to me a little bit about, you mentioned that you started as a claims assistant at Guardian. I'm interested because your work life didn't start in insurance. Your work life started in promotional marketing.
Well, actually, my work life started in a cafe at 13. So I've always worked. But, yeah, my corporate life started in Corporate Express, it was called at the time. Then it was bought by Staples and I think it's called Wink now. My first corporate job, my mum's best friend was very senior there and she goes, oh, we've got junior sales support person. do you want to come and interview? So I had an interview and I got the job and, yeah, I had my first corporate job where I wore my little suits to work and high heels and got all dressed up and I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't have the pressure of emails ever before and, yeah, it was a really good learning curve. I was there for, I think, 3.5 years. So I did sales support and then I did a maternity leave contract as an account manager for about 10 months and I loved being that client-facing and having the sales support, you know, experience prior really helped me do that role. And I did it really well, hit my targets every month for the 10 months. And then the lady came back from mat leave and there wasn't enough space in the company for me and her to both have that role. So I guess I would have had to take a step back. And I was like, oh, I'm not ready to take a step back. I'm ready to go do something else. So I was ready for a change. And yeah, I ended up, well, actually I interviewed to go and be a travel agent of all things at Fly Center. And I almost took the job because it's actually quite a rigorous interview process to get into Fly Center. And my boyfriend at the time, his dad worked at Vero as a risk surveyor and was out on site surveying a risk of Evan Jackson's from Guardian. And he was looking for a claims assistant and said, I know someone that's looking for a job at the moment. And so I went for an interview and in typical Evan fashion, he offered me the job on the day.
What intrigues me is you look at the print and promotional side of things and you look at that account management sort of role you had, it's in a pretty sexy industry, right? Because you're actually creating something as opposed to having an intangible. When you walked into this perceived boring industry of insurance, what did you find? You know, what was it that you've gone, oh, okay, I didn't realize that blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I thought the same. I was like, oh, insurance, that's going to be boring. And travel looked way sexier compared to insurance. But I really liked Evan's why and that he had started his own business and he told me his history of working at Zurich. And I think I just liked his passion for the industry. And he sort of told me what a career path could look like in insurance. And, you know, I thought I'd just give it a go, really, more than anything. And I thought, worst case scenario, I try this 6 to 12 months and I hate it. I can always go work and travel or I can go and do something else. So I'm glad I took the stab at doing it. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't exactly sexy to start with. It was actually quite boring and quite hard because you have to learn a whole new language. You know, I started in claims, which was a great place to start. You learn how policy responds. You have to read the wording. So you have to interpret a client telling you what's happened in their loss and seeing if it's covered. So good critical thinking skills, but I was exhausted. And then, you know, the good thing about Guardian is that they were like, we want you to do your T1. We want you to do your diploma. We want you to go on and do study. So I was doing that as well on the side on the weekends. And then within 6 months, I was, I'm working as an assistant to Evan and Heather. They had a team of 4 assistants. But, yeah, it was very different.
And so what kept you in insurance?
The progression at the start. So after 6 months, being able to be an assistant to both the director and one of the senior brokers and learning off the other senior assistants. Like I wasn't assisting really right on the tool straight away. I was sitting there learning how to draft a slip, learning how to re-quote things after only 6 months in claims. And I think just seeing like people going out to meetings after about a year or so, like Heather and Evan would take me out to meetings and I'd see them talking to clients. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like I can't wait till I can know about policies enough like that. I can't wait until I can be confident and present to clients like that because I present it to clients, but I'm showing them like a jumper with a fancy logo on it or a coffee mug with your name engraved on it. It's not hard. When someone asks you a question about risk and you have to think on the spot and know your policies and know the product, I was really impressed by them. So I think the constant progression there and also the constant having to like keep learning. So I would get into work and like Evan would walk past and put his head over the, you know, those 3-quarter divider things and ask me a question about what's the trigger of a liability policy. 7 months into this job, I've got no idea what a trigger to a liability policy is. I'm like, injury? And he's like, negligence, read a wording. It was a lot of pressure, but it made me a good broker.
I want to change tack a little bit with you, Jasmine Gabrielli. I want to talk about you've been the co-chair of the National Insurance Brokers Association Victoria Young Professionals Committee. That's a bit of a mouthful. And you've been that co-chair since 2016. You've also been on the Victorian Tasmanian Divisional Committee. What sort of prompted you to dedicate your time to those voluntary industry organisations?
Yeah, so I started with NEBA when I did the mentoring program back in Adelaide. So after I did that mentoring program, I then joined this SA committee. I was only on there for a couple of months before I moved to Melbourne. So then I joined the Victorian committee. And I just really wanted to immerse myself. Once I realised that I liked broking and I liked insurance, I was like, I want to immerse myself. I want to make good connections. I want to give back. And I thought it was an opportunity to learn. So if I was part of a committee, I'd be able to learn off my colleagues and, you know, we could bounce things off each other and I'd make friends in the industry and give back. And then over the years, it's just become like a community for me, especially moving to Melbourne, not having a huge network. It was an awesome way for me to make friends in the industry and connections for work. And then being co-chair on the YP committee, we attend the divisional meetings, which I'm in there with seniors and I see how they run a proper committee meeting and, you know, they'll chair it and how meetings are really held. And yeah, it was really good development for me.
With your experience, you know, you're quite well known in the industry now because you've been part of these volunteer committees and also some of the other stuff that you've done. How has that business exposure impacted you in your business life?
I think it's really helped with, you know, obtaining jobs or making my next step in the industry, probably helped with developing relationships with underwriters as well, because, you know, not only are, you know, is it good for a community networking, but it's also you're putting on training sessions for other young professionals and you're leveraging relationships with underwriters for sponsorship and, you know, putting on learning and development activities. So it's definitely helps because, you know, you might do a training session with an underwriter and then you get to know them really well and then you start writing business with them. And that really helps in your career because this is a relationship business.
Without a doubt, at every level, whether it's underwriters or whether it's clients, it's all about relationships, isn't it? I wanted to ask you, so you moved to Honan's a little while ago. You're a key client manager. What's the best part of your job?
Well, that's a recent role because I only started doing that in, I think, November last year. Before that, I was the commercial team leader, so I had a team of six or seven under me. But what I'm loving about my new role is the new business side of it. So I have a portfolio of clients, but then I'm very much responsible for driving growth and growth initiatives in the business. So whether it be making sure that the client or the team are actively offering cyber insurance to everyone and growing the portfolio that way and making sure everyone's risks are covered, or if it's, you know, meeting new clients and helping them, you know, with their brand new business. They might just start off as a small public liability policy that, you know, they're selling a product or candles at a market or something, and then they might grow into something really exciting. So I guess that's what I like the most about new business in particular and also SME businesses, because you're starting from the ground up and you see it grow into something awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And what would you say is the most challenging part of your new role?
I'm putting myself out there to get new clients, which is something I really want to challenge myself to do. So, you know, I think it's easy when it's inbound new business, but going out and developing relationships with referrer partners and people, you know, potentially clients then on referring to, you know, their friends and contacts. So that's the most challenging part. Yeah, I'm slowly getting better at it. And it's just something that I want to keep growing because it's the more you grow your networks, especially not being from Melbourne. I didn't go to a school here in Melbourne, which often is how people network and how they know people and that sort of thing and how they get business leads. Being reasonably new to Melbourne, you have to develop that yourself and you have to make a name for yourself outside of the industry to obtain, you know, new clients. So that is the most challenging thing for me at the moment.
I mean, you don't let the grass grow under your feet. So you've got an Instagram page now. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's just something new I've started. So the Insurance Oracle, I wanted to make a page where small businesses who are also advertising on Instagram might come across, say, beauty therapists, and they might be just doing eyebrows or waxing from home. And a lot of people don't even think to take out insurance because they might just start with friends and family and then word of mouth and then a couple of people from Instagram. And so I want to sort of eventually get on the algorithm where people will come across insurance and it'll be like, oh, yeah, I probably need to take out insurance. And why? Like, make it simple, say, this is what you do. These are your exposures. and we can, you know, organise insurance to protect you for it. And I think it's just more of an educational thing, because a lot of small business owners, they don't think of insurance as the first step for their business. They think of what they're doing, whether it's, you know, detailing cars, whether it's, you know, beauty, makeup. They don't think to insure their kit, and they start growing. And I've seen this happen before with friends, like makeup business, they're turning over 200 grand nearly, and they haven't insured their $30,000 kit. And then something happens to it when they're traveling, because they're doing celebrity makeup now and that sort of thing. And unless you tell people this is something that you should consider, they're not going to think about it. They're just going to think about where they're going to get their next client from.
Yeah, it's certainly not high on the priority list. And people often describe insurance as a bit of a grudge purchase, right?
Definitely. You know, often sole traders too, they don't have work cover insurance, and something happens, they get injured. You know, how do they protect themselves and keep that income coming in? So it's really important to just flag it with people and go, hey, have you thought if this happens, have you thought about how, you know, you'll keep having an income? Lots of things like that. So just, it's more of an educational thing, and yeah, just something to do in my spare time because I'm such an insurance nerd.
If I was able to give you a magic wand and I was to say to you, Radio Jasmine Gabrielli, key client manager at Honan's, you can change anything in the insurance industry, what would you change?
Proposal forms would be my big one, because we have so much technology now. Why are we refilling out proposal forms from last year and putting all the same information in when you already have 90% of it? It just needs a few key details. Why are we still in the dark ages of making clients fill these things out? That's my change.
And a good change too. I'd certainly support it. Hey, I've got a couple of final questions for you, Jasmine, before we let you go. What would you say to encourage people with the right qualities to consider joining the insurance industry?
I would say it's a lot more exciting than it looks from the outside, you know, and there's so much opportunity for anyone in the industry with any background of any university degree that you can find a role in insurance that will excite you and keep you interested. And there's room to move, and there's opportunities to travel, and there's, you know, it's a very social industry. And yeah, we work hard, but I'd at least give it a go or speak to someone that is in the industry and find out what they love about it and what they hate about it and make your decision. Yeah, it's definitely a best kept secret, really, because unless you fall into it like everyone else, you don't go striving to be an insurance broker.
And if you were able to go back to that 13-year-old Jasmine who started working, what advice would you give her?
Don't take things personally. So a lot of times people have given me critical feedback and just feedback out of care, really, and I've taken it personally. And I think I would have grown and matured a lot quicker and a lot, you know, not being so hard on myself if I just took it on board, listened, and thought it was coming from a place of care and support instead of someone being critical.
It's a difficult one to do, isn't it? Because if someone's speaking to you about...
Definitely, and still learning.
Yeah, you know, something that you're not doing right, or they perceive that you could do better, it is hard not to take it personally. And the final question to you, if I asked you to describe yourself in 5 words or less, what would they be?
I would say hardworking, passionate, honest, fun sometimes, and caring.
Hey, I really, really appreciate you joining us today and being so open and honest about your experiences. It's been really fantastic having you on Business Made Personal, Jasmine.
Thank you for having me on board, and thanks for all your work with the podcast. I think it's great to be advertising insurance in a different light for people to enter the industry.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jasmine. Thank you so much for lending us your ears. Please remember to click follow on your podcast app or subscribe at bmppodcast.com.au so we can give you a sneak peek of our next guest. Until next time, I'm Mark Silvera, and you've been listening to Business Made Personal.